Good afternoon and welcome to Senate Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Budget Subdivision. Thursday, March 19th. And the first piece of legislation that we have on the docket is Senate File 673. Senator Stumpf and Senator Anderson are co-authors. The Kennedy Energy Conversion Building Project Appropriation. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you mentioned, Senator Stumpf is the chief author of this bill, and he had to go back to his district today, so he asked me to present it on his behalf, and I am a co-author on this bill, and I don't know enough to really talk about the details, but I do know that it's a pretty exciting project about a business center that will be a really green business center, and that's the proposal. And so I have with me Shannon Mortensen, who's the city clerk and treasurer from the city of Kennedy, who can really talk about it in detail.
Very good.
To introduce her and let her give you some more information about the bill.
Ms. Mortensen, would you identify yourself and go ahead and give us a presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Anderson. I am Shannon Mortensen. I'm the city clerk treasurer from the city of Kennedy, and I'm speaking on behalf of the city this afternoon. The city of Kennedy is pursuing funds for a green business incubator that focuses on green energy development. The Go Green Business Center will be a model for the use of green energy and host green energy businesses. The incubator will take all of us into the future for green energy use. The center will start out by housing some of the most respected people in the new and emerging industry of alternative energy. It will provide an environment for entrepreneurs to share research, development, ideas, and contacts. It will be a location where citizens, communities, and students can see, touch, and feel green energy and learn firsthand how to adapt that knowledge to their own environment. Now, we do have three green businesses in place once the energy conversion occurs. The first tenant will be Next Generation Power Systems, Inc., which is a company owned by Dan Jewell. If you don't know Dan, he is a highly respected businessman who pioneered wind energy. Today, he does travel all over the country consulting on wind energy development. The company NextGen sells wind turbines, solar panels, geothermal, and backup systems to farms and residences. So this equipment would be used in the green energy conversion and then will provide a showcase in which people can educate themselves on alternative energy sources. The second tenant will be Todco, and this company is owned by Todd Trutzen. He is a master electrician from Kennedy, but the unique thing about Todd is he holds an EPRI transmitter tech license, and this license allows him to do the calibration of highly sensitive metering systems. There are only a handful of individuals in the states of Minnesota and North Dakota that hold this licensure. So that license will be invaluable to him when he installs the next-gen systems. So Todco will install and maintain the systems sold by next-gen.
I just made it up.
Now, the third tenant will be in the center next spring, and that is Jewell Wind, which is a publicly held company started by Dan Jewell.
Yeah, I mean,
Jewell Wind is constructing a commercial wind farm south of Kennedy. The wind farm will be 19 wind turbines with a construction cost of $200 million. During the construction and after, there will be service and maintenance technicians employed. So these businesses will create 6 to 8 jobs by the end of this year, 2009. Then there should be 16 to 20 jobs created by the end of next year, 2010. So in less than 24 months, you have created jobs with an estimated payroll of almost $1 million. And then these are new jobs that are created. And the city of Kennedy is pursuing other green businesses at this time, and we are confident they will locate at the Go Green Business Center in 2010. Dan Jewell would also like to create an education center where people from all walks of life will come and learn about alternative energy. Collaborations will take place between the center and institutions of higher learning to further the development and education of green energy. Dan's vision and overall goal is to educate society to further the use of alternative energies. So the $300,000 the City of Kennedy is requesting would pay for the conversion of the entire building to geothermal wind and solar energy. Dan Jewell's providing the materials at cost, which contributes to the lower price tag. So this conversion would then be a model for other buildings and create the showplace needed to enhance the use of green energy. These tenants not only talk the talk, but they walk the walk. They believe in ending our dependence on fossil fuels, and they don't want to be in a building that's a fossil fuel hog. Now, right now, the building is heated with fuel oil, and we're estimating it'll take 30,000 gallons of fuel oil this season, and that is keeping all the thermostats at 55 degrees, which is the lowest where they will go. And the building is a fossil fuel hog. So ending dependence on fossil fuels is a goal that these tenants have. It's a goal that we have as a city and that we all should have. And the Go Green Business Center would help accelerate and achieve that goal. Now, the city is pursuing other funding sources. We have a grant submitted to the federal EDA, or Economic Development Administration, and that is for $386,000. But that application required administrative and engineering costs to be included. The district representative, John O'Leary, was in Kennedy. He reviewed the project and he toured the building. He was very impressed with the condition of the building, and after his tour, that he stated that he would recommend funding to his regional director. Well, last week we received notification that the project merits further consideration. So the only point that we need to fulfill right now is the 50-50 match requirement. So it would be the City of Kennedy's hope that this project can be a joint collaboration of state and federal dollars. And these funds would help move alternative energy development into the next decade and help end our independence on fossil fuels. We do have a lot of community support for this project. In January, the city determined that we didn't have enough fuel oil to heat through the winter, so a call went out to the community for donations. Local farmers donated 5,000 gallons of fuel oil to help heat the building. And every one of them that came in the city office said, you know, we want to maintain this building so it'll house the businesses that we need for this community to sustain itself in the future. So the community wants this and the area needs this. We are asking for your support of $300,000, but hopefully it would only be $184,000 for the federal match. And that would create a new economy in northern Minnesota that would benefit the entire state. I do understand the budget deficit and the challenges that you face, but with this project, you create jobs, you increase the energy efficiency of a building, therefore cutting its operating costs, and you increase the exposure to green energy to everyday citizens. The money appropriated to this project will be an investment, not an expense. It's an investment our country and our state desperately need during this time. Thank you for considering funding of this project, and I will answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kennedy. Or not Ms. Kennedy. Excuse me, Ms. Mortensen from Kennedy.
Ms. Mortensen.
Anybody with a first name is Shannon, I figured you should add a name like Kennedy. Are there any questions?
And Mr. Chair, I would...
Senator.
I just want to comment. I've known Dan Jewell for about 15 years, and he's... really the pioneer on wind development in the state of Minnesota. And he kind of was the leader starting this in the early 90s or even before when, you know, the first innovative folks in Minnesota said, hey, a new wind revolution is about to occur and we're going to kick it off right here in Minnesota. And he's the person who really led that the way in Minnesota. And now his company has grown, is very successful. And so... I think this is a pretty exciting proposal for northwestern Minnesota, and, you know, we just got those the new jobs numbers for the state, and they are grim. They are really grim. And I know we've said this a number of times and all across the Capitol that we have to focus every effort that we can this session on trying to create jobs and maintain jobs and support job growth in our state more than ever. So... that's why I do support this project. It's a green jobs project that I think will be a good model for the state. Members, I think the bill as drafted recommends taking funding from the Renewable Development Fund. I think what I would ask the committee to do is just lay it on the table, and we'll have to discuss it about whether we can fit this in our budget or not and what the source of funding would be, whether we do have that, I can't say at this point, but we certainly, I think, need to look favorably upon this as a possibility.
Senator Anderson, before you make that motion, Senator Rummel has a question.
Well, it's not so much a question, Mr. Chair, as it is a comment. This bill was heard in the Energy Committee. I don't know if anyone else was there that day, but it was, I think, extensively vetted. Lots and lots of questions to the various persons who came up to testify about the scope of the bill and the way the things would work, and it passed without objection.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Vickman, did you have a question?
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if the stimulus money, that's all gone, that wouldn't work. And just, there was some money in there for energy, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think that's...
Just a thought, maybe we could find some in that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Vickerman, I think we need to look at that and see if that might be the best way to come up with some dollars if we can, rather than the Renewable Development Fund, which is pretty well subscribed. So that's a discussion we'll have to have in this division.
So, Senator Anderson, you moving to lay this bill over for possible inclusion?
That would be my motion, Mr.
Right.
Chair.
Anybody else would like to testify on this? Any other discussion from the committee? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And Senator Anderson, would you want to take Senate File 384?
Yes.
Right now?
Mr. Chair, if I could, that would
okay.
be great.
Okay. Senate File 384, Metropolitan Regional Park System Operations Maintenance Appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And I'm just going to introduce this. This is the budget request of the Metropolitan Regional Parks Groups. And as you can see in the bill, it's a request for $4.05 million a year. We just want to have a presentation to be able to explain why this is a good budget proposal for the Metropolitan Parks and do a little bit of a review of how that would work and what the great services that these different regional parks provide to our residents across the metropolitan area. So I'd like to introduce John Vondelinde from Anoka County, who's here, from the Anoka County Regional Parks District, Mike Hamm, who's our St. Paul Parks Director, and Steve Sullivan from Dakota County. And they're going to do a presentation about this proposal and about the Metropolitan Regional Parks System. And we also have Chris
Gears
from the Three Rivers Parks District, and he's available for questions, I believe, as well. And so I'll just let them go through the presentation, and hopefully it will be informative. And
who's going to be first?
Mr. Vondelinde.
Okay, Mr. Hamm, identify yourself and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Anderson. For the record, my name is John Vondelinde. I'm Parks and Recreation Director with Anoka County. We'll be presenting today in two parts. Our comments will be brief. I'd like to start by just providing an overview of the Metropolitan Regional Park System. That will be followed by some individual comments from the regional park implementing agencies that are here this afternoon. The Metropolitan Regional Park System is comprised of 10 regional park implementing agencies, which includes the counties of Anoka, Ramsey, Washington, Dakota, Scott, and Carver. It also includes the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, the cities of St. Paul, and Bloomington. The Three Rivers Park District oversees regional parks and trails in suburban Hennepin County. All told, there are 37 regional parks, including Lake Waconia Regional Park in Carver County. There are 12 park reserves. These are larger parks, over 1,000 acres in size. That includes, for instance, Rice Creek Chain of Lakes Park Reserve, that's in the area that I manage in Anoka County. There are 6 special recreation features in the metropolitan area, and as an example, Nornberg Gardens on the shore of Lake Minnetonka is one of those special features. And lastly, there are about 170 miles of regional trails, bike trails, that are operated and maintained by the regional park agencies, such as the Big Rivers Regional Trail in Dakota County. Metropolitan Regional Park System is a regional system, as it serves not only people from throughout the metropolitan area, but also throughout greater Minnesota and visitors who come to our park system from outside of the state. The system was established by the state legislature in 1974 to provide state park-like experiences for people living in the metropolitan area and visiting the metropolitan area. And as you can see from this chart, about 7% of our visits are people that live outside of the metropolitan area. So we do attract and serve people who are outside of the metro area. About 41% of our visits are persons who live in the seven-county metro area but visit the parks that are outside of their home communities. In other words, they cross over counties and cities to use other parks in the metropolitan area. And 52% are folks that visit parks within their regional parks within their local implementing agency jurisdictional boundaries. Consequently, it's appropriate for the Metropolitan Council and the state of Minnesota to work in partnership with the regional park agencies by not only capital for development, but also for the operations and maintenance of the regional park system. The next slide illustrates the use of the parks and the trends that we've seen since the system was first established in 1974. From this, you can see that the growth has been rather impressive. From our early year, 1974, when the system was first established and we had 5 million visitors, today we are experiencing in excess of 30 million visits, 33 million specifically in 2007, and the number continues grow. In fact, we have seen in the last 34 years about a 5.7% annual growth rate in the regional system. In response to that, the regional agencies have been building more facilities, building more trails, increasing our services and programming to our customers, and the cost of doing business has also increased. Over that time, it increased on average by about 7.3% per year to provide operations and maintenance support. Currently, the 10 regional park implementing agencies spend about $100 million per biennium to support the use of the regional park system. And in terms of how the system is financed, currently, about 91% of the cost of providing the service, the revenues, are generated through local property taxes and park user fees. The balance is made up through state assistance that includes both the state general fund, which is the topic of today's discussion, and also the natural resources fund, which is the lottery in lieu of money, which was put into place in 2001. Collectively together, those two sources pay for about 9% of the current budgetary needs of the regional park system. The balance, again, is on local property taxes and park users. Just a few comments from Anoka County specifically, and then I'll turn it over to Mike from the city of St. Paul. Another issue that is facing us not only is the proposed cut of 10%, which is in the administration budget for operations and maintenance funding to the regional system, but most of us that operate regional parks, such as Anoka County, are also facing cuts in local government aid and county aids. And in fact, in our system, there is across the board 5.6% cut that we've been asked to make in the Anoka County departments that my department is being affected by. Cutting 10% of operations and maintenance money will compound that impact at a time when we're seeing a significant increased pressure on our park systems. One of those situations that I think we're faced with now is the increased use that's really from people who want to find more affordable, quality leisure time activities close to home, a phenomenon that we're calling, or you've heard of, vacationing closer to home, staycation. And in the case of Anoka County, I think last year we saw some of that being driven by the high price of fuel. This year, I think we're seeing it more really in relation to the downturn in the economy. People are looking for close-to-home, affordable recreation. Just To give you an example, in the last 5 years in our county, we've seen a 35% increase in camping, 142% increase in picnic shelter use, and an 85% increase in our programs and special events attendance. As I said, I feel that this is being driven by the economic downturn, and we're in a business where it's kind of ironic. It seems in the worst of economic times, people want to get out to the parks more than ever because they can't afford to travel distances, or they're looking for a way to release stress that they find in their everyday lives as a result of their unemployment or underemployment. This is a place to find balance in their lives. They see our parks as a place for respite and relaxation. So as our use goes up and the financing goes down, it becomes increasingly difficult for us to keep up with the demand. In addition to that, the increased use that we've had on our park system, and I think this is true for all of the park agencies that are here today, that this increased use on our system is also aggravating and accelerating the maintenance and repairs that we find are necessary in the regional park system. I can tell you that as I sit here today, we have about $4 million in backlogged deferred maintenance just in our park system alone in Anoka County. So given the legislature's intent, as we look back to 1985 when this program was first put together, and the goal at that time to fund 40% of the regional park system operations and maintenance cost, where we've seen some erosion in recent years, coupled with the other issues that I've pointed out, the reduction in local government aids, the close-to-home recreational phenomenon that we see now and I think is going to be with us for the long term, coupled with increased costs from trying to respond to these increased needs for maintenance of buildings and services, reservation staff, park security staff, coupled with our deferred maintenance issues that we have, I'm appealing, and I think all of us are appealing to your committee today, please consider holding the line on any funding cuts to the operations and maintenance program so we can try to do our best job to deal with these issues that we're facing. With that, I will close and turn it over to my colleague, Mike.
Before we pass it on, Mr. Vaughn,
yes,
and Lindy, so 91% is local property taxes and park user fees. How do you divide that up? How much is property taxes and how much is user fees?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. In the case of Anoka County, about 30% of our revenues outside of the state funding that we're receiving is from user fees and charges, and about 70% is property taxes. I can't speak for the other agencies. Arnie Sefferud's here from Metro Council, but he doesn't have that data with him.
Maybe we can ask the other agencies. And how about the state funds that you do get? How is that divided up amongst the different jurisdictions?
Thank you. I'd be happy to comment on that. In terms of the jurisdictional framework of how the funds are divided, that's based on a formula that I believe is set in statute. It's based on park acreage, park visitation, and historic expenses of each agency over time. I believe it's averaged back 4 years. Those three elements come together in a formula for distribution of the funds system-wide. It's a fair system. We've been using it since 1985, and it seems to work well.
Everybody's satisfied with
that. Everyone's satisfied with that. I might also comment, Mr. Chair, on how the funds between the state general fund and local property taxes and park user fees are split and used. In the case of Anoka County, and again, I don't want to speak for the system as a whole, we use the state general fund appropriation for annual year-to-year operations. It's part of our budget, and if there's a cut there, there's a cut in services. The natural resources fund money that you see on the chart in our particular case is used more for one-time rehab, replacement, equipment, technology kinds of investments.
Thank you. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question about how do you determine the priority for investment in terms of right now, where do you put the dollars in terms of maintaining and keeping up with the demand? You said that right now you are having some difficulties keeping up with the demand. I assume that some parks, that you have demand on some parks versus others, and then that you will need to pay attention to that because obviously you know, you have, if you have more people in places where you capture more revenue because of fees, you pay attention to that. Could you explain how that process actually works?
Sure. Mr. Chair, committee members, Metropolitan Council, aside from this operations and maintenance program, also provides capital funding through state bonding and LCCMR appropriations. We're looking forward to visiting with this committee in the future about the Park and Trails Fund as a result of the legacy amendment. Those dollars are split up between acquisition, where there's demand for additional services in the metropolitan area. They're used to expand facilities and trails to meet public demand, and they're also used for major redevelopment projects in the system. Beyond that, again, going back to the Natural Resources Fund or the lottery in lieu of, those are dollars that are used with the discretion, within the discretion of each agency. They're applied to the parks where we have the highest level of deferred maintenance needs. For instance, where parking lots and roads may be breaking up and need to be replaced, or a building doesn't meet ADA requirements or has a leaky roof. I mean, those are prioritized within each agency. And to some extent, each agency also has their own capital investment program within their own budgets that they prioritize themselves. So I don't know if I've responded to your question totally. I might also add one more comment, that not only does the Metro system have a system-wide capital plan that's driven by needs for acquisition, development, redevelopment, but each agency has its own comprehensive park system plan with priorities for investment in those three areas, and each agency also has an approved master plan for every component of the regional park system, which identifies capital needs, rehabilitation needs, and timelines that are associated with each of those individual projects. So they're done individually by agency and collectively by the Metropolitan Council.
Senator Ray.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. So I am more interested in kind of knowing your process for determining really where you go. So you have these master plans that are put together, and they are given to, how do you have a process for determining, you know, this year we're going to invest money in this because this is a priority? I'm curious about the system that you use currently to determine priorities so that you utilize the money in the most effective way.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I think I'm going to ask Arnie Stefford to step forward. Arnie is with the Metropolitan Council. Arnie oversees the grant funding program for the regional park system, and I think would be, if it's all right with the pleases of the committee, I think Arnie would be the best person to respond to the system and how the Metropolitan Council approaches the prioritization and distribution of funds.
Thank you.
Mr. Stefford, would you identify yourself and go ahead?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Torres-Ray, the Metro Council's capital improvement program for parks essentially splits...
Mr. Stefford, just for the microphone and the recorder...
I'm sorry, Arnie Stefford.
That's okay.
Yes, my name is Arnie Stefford. I'm with the Metro Council and planning analyst in the parks program. The Council's Regional Parks Capital Improvement Program essentially splits a pot of money into 10 pieces, and those pieces are determined based upon the population of each park agency, and that's given a weight of 70%, and the amount of non-local visits each park agency hosts compared to all non-local visits to the system, and that's given a weight of 30%. And once that piece is decided, then each agency decides on its own what are its priorities to spend that part of the capital improvement program. So I'm going to have to punt back to Mr. Mondalindi as to what his agency's process is for making their own priorities within their portion of the CIP.
Excuse Mr. Mondalindi.
Mr. Chair.
And go ahead,
just
Senator
to follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So each one, you don't need to go in detail into. I'm just more interested about kind of the regional system and how you make the determination for priorities. But that's good enough.
Mr. Chair, committee members, the Metro Council is guided by a 6-year capital improvement program. It's a 3-biennial appropriation request. That sort of guides the overall framework for the system as a whole. And then requests are made each biennium through the various funding sources I talked about earlier, prioritizations made within each agency for capital projects consistent with the overall metro-wide system plan and the individual agency comprehensive system plans.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hamm?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Mike Hamm. I'm the Parks and Recreation Director for the City of St. Paul. I'm not going to be repetitive and talk about some of the issues that Mr. Von der Linde explained very well. What I will do is provide some context within the City of St. Paul system for the value that we try to provide the citizens of the state of Minnesota for their investment in this program and the impact that the reductions would have. The City of St. Paul is certainly a unit of local government that will be affected by any changes in the local government aid formula. Right now in our system, our Parks Department has prepared recommendations for a 14% reduction to our programs overall. So certainly any reductions in Metro Parks spending will compound and make that more complicated. Our system, we manage on behalf of the regional park system, 7 regional parks and 2 regional trails in St. Paul. And to where the dollars are directed, a lot of uses don't have a lot of variation based on use. The cost is somewhat static based on use. I think trail use would be an example of that, that if more people are using a trail in the summer, the cost to maintain that remains relatively the same. We do have a number of services, and I'm going to illustrate two, that the staycationing that Mr. Von der Linde alluded to, the stay closer to home recreation element, where there's high impact uses that as budgets are reduced, our costs will increase. The first is in last year, the first year of this phenomenon, in 2008, our park permits increased by 173 throughout the system without adding a shelter. That was an increase of 9% in our park permit applications. And within our system, 50% of our users come from outside of our local jurisdiction. The second example to illustrate this is already this year, and it's been somewhat of a poor weather year other than this week we've had right here, but at Como Park Zoo and Conservatory, our year-to-date attendance is up 15% over last year's numbers, and last year was a record year for us in terms of attendance at Como Park. The destination at Como is one where 84% of our visitors are non-local visitors, visitors that come from outside of the City of St. Paul. In terms of where this impact would be felt, it is in the recommendations that I've put forward on what we're considering, it's very unlikely or impractical that we will plow less trails or maintain less trail space or maintain less grass. Where the reductions in services will be in our system, if we are faced with reductions, are in things where we have opportunity, where there are variables. They will be the things like park security services. There will also be our building trades that take care of painting schedules, carpentry repairs, plumbing schedules, and annualized maintenance. In our surveys that we've done, our users encourage us to take care of the assets that we have, so it'll be a challenge to respond to that need if budgets are declining. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I also ask you to consider holding the line on where funding is within the Metro Regional Park System.
Thank you, Mr. Hamm. Our question...
Mr. Chair, the last testifier is Mr. Sullivan from Dakota County.
I've been coached to do the two-minute warning here, so I will proceed accordingly. I'd really like to just provide two tangible examples of where these cuts will have an impact. And Dakota County is a growing system. We're adding park units. Well, Vermilion Highlands, one that Senator Pariseau is very aware of, that occurred last year, as well as we're adding regional trails. It's amazing how much use the regional trail gets. 4 Mile Trail in Dakota County gets 150,000 visits per year. We're going to be adding 9 miles of trail in the next year. Also, we're adding acreage, about 500 in this past year. So essentially, a decrease in O&M funding within a growing system creates a gap in terms of operational capacity. That's really what we're all speaking to today. The predominant use of the O&M funds for Dakota County that we derive from the state is for our natural resource program. And a 10% decrease in O&M funding results in a 27% decrease in our ability to deliver our natural resource program. Essentially, half of all our new acreage that we'll restore will not occur next year. And one-third of our active acreage that we're currently managing will not occur next year. And so the natural resource program and our responsibility to be good stewards of some of the best land in the metro area will be impacted within Dakota County. The last area I'd like to mention is the Vermilion Highlands Regional Park. And as many of you know, and we're responsible for, there may be up to 4,000 acres of new open space in Dakota County as a result of a DNR, University of Minnesota and Dakota County Collaborative. We acquired the Butler parcel last year, and we hope to see 4,000 acres open for public use within the next year to some degree. These O&M dollars and us being able to maintain our capacity to deliver recreational services is fundamental to us being able to open that park, as well as our ability to maintain some of the culturally impacted natural resources that are on that land. And so with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions, and we thank you for your consideration.
Well, thank you, Ms. Sullivan. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson, what was the appropriation in the 08-09 year for?
Senator Rummel, thank you. That was how I was going to wrap up here, was just to – so thank you. Perfect timing, was just to put this in the context of the governor's budget recommendations. The governor's proposal is a 10% cut to the base budget. So the base budget would be that 4.050 per year funding. And that was the budget in the last biennium, and that would be the budget this year. The governor's recommending a 10% reduction per year. And I think it's really important. You've heard some themes emerging from this presentation. I know the Metropolitan Parks come before us every year, but it's really clear that, as we say often, our parks in the metropolitan area are being loved to death. And it's true. Okay, at least one person hasn't heard that. But, but yeah. I've said it like 400 times. So you're the odd.
She doesn't live here either, Madam Chair.
But the fact is, with today's economy, gas prices and job layoffs and people shrinking incomes and all those things are contributing to the demand on these parks and the need that we provide those public services to people in our communities. And, I mean, I know the St. Paul system the best, of course, because I live there. And Mike didn't mention, I don't think, that what he also oversees is all the city's rec centers, which are a large number of which are proposed to be closed, given LGA cuts. And so if that goes forward, you know, all these different pieces put more pressure on the system. And if those cuts go forward, we're going to have children and families this summer across our city with no rec centers to go to in their neighborhood. And in some neighborhoods, some of which I represent, are on the chopping block for their rec centers. Guess where they're going to go? They're going to go to Como Park. They're going to go to the other parks because people need places to go outside. And thank goodness we have them in Minnesota, but we have to protect those. And so I really appreciate the work that all of the partners do in the metropolitan area. I think they do a great job. The state has been very supportive. We've provided bonding dollars to expand and improve some of the infrastructure at these parks without providing any additional funding. And so the park units have figured out how to run those new buildings and to provide more services, but they really can't survive with a cut to their budgets at this time. So I think that's an important message.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Anderson or Mr. Hamm, I guess you'd mentioned the piece about the user fees. I guess, you know, are those fees set by each of the parks, or are those kind of a free will, pay what you can, or pay if somebody's looking at you, or what are they? How are they computed, or, you know, is there a suggested donation, or what's the...
Mr. Chair, members, in St. Paul, we have all of the above. We do have user fees for park permits that are very structured. We also have a special recreational asset in St. Paul, the Como Zoo and Conservatory, where part of our financing budget is based upon a voluntary donation at the admission point, where we do generate about 20% of our operating budget there at Como from that source. So we do have fees that are established very programmatically. We also do have, in the case of our Como facility, a donation program and a nonprofit that raises money on our behalf that's part of financing that facility.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hamm. I guess some of my county parks are having the same problem. I'm just trying to get some ideas.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I have no doubt that in communities all around the state, they're facing the exact same pressures. So we just have a lot of people crammed into this area that need these park facilities as well. So, thank
Any
you,
other
Mr.
questions,
Chair.
Members? Or?
I guess I would move that Senate File 384 be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus funding bill and laid on the table.
Okay. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Thank you very much. The bill has passed and is laid on the table.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pariseau?
Well, I was going to ask Senator Anderson a question. She walks by and ask her here.
Senator Anderson?
That's okay when she walks
by. We had a question from another member here that came up a bit late.
Senator Pariseau, you're asking about the libraries that are also being proposed to be closed?
Well, I'm not sure that they're going to be closed. Well, I know that one in my daughter's neighborhood is going to be closed.
In Hamlin Midway, which is my constituent, apparently. I didn't realize. Your sister lived in my district.
No, one of my daughters.
Your daughters,
And the kids go, and they're only about two blocks, and the kids go to the library all the time. You've got to stop that. You've got to get in and call City Hall and say, don't do this.
Well, Senator Pariseau, we can work together on this, because if we can avoid, seriously, I mean, those...
I mean, we spent our time at the library all the time when we were kids. The Arlington Library.
Mm-hmm.
With the bad example this year.
Well, those...
The bad experience this year.
You're so right. Those are neighborhood institutions. Those are where children go to learn to read. And... Family spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
Senator Pariseau, if we can avoid quite as much in LGA cuts, we can save that library. That's going to make the difference for that library.
Okay.
So we got to work together on that.
I don't get any of the LGA cuts, so I would know.
Well, they're up to us in the legislature, and if we can avoid the extent of those cuts, then our city will be able to save the library and some of the rec centers, I hope.
Those are all
and a lot of other cities around the state as well. So thank you for asking about that. Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1215 deals with the clean energy resource teams. These teams have been operating in a number of areas of the state, and this bill seeks continued funding for them, but also brings the work of the resource teams into the metropolitan area. You can take a look at the bill. It tells you a little bit on lines 1, 12, and 13 what the resource teams are about. To my way of thinking, I guess, they've really generated a pretty broad base of support for clean forms of energy, for renewable forms of energy, certainly across my district, but I think across the areas that they serve. And that's a big benefit to us as we try to do the work here that that we've done on some of the clean energy projects. So I think their work is certainly deserving of a hearing, and I think deserving of funding. But today, with me today is Lisa Polish and Diana McKinnon. I'm not sure if I pronounced that right. McEwen?
McEwen.
Right. All right. Got better on the second try. But anyway, I'd like to give them an opportunity to tell you a little bit about the clean energy resource teams.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Diana McEwen. I am the Metro CERTS coordinator at the Green Institute. Thank you, Senator. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in front of the committee today. I will let my colleague introduce herself, and then the two of us will share our testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Polish. I'm the laugh track over here on the side. I work for the University of Minnesota's Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships, and with my colleague Joel Haskard, who's over here. We work with five of the clean energy resource teams around the state, the Northeast, the Northwest, the Central, the West Central, and the Southeast. I would like to echo Diana's sentiments. We thank you for inviting us today to talk about CERTS. We think it's been a very successful program. We're going to divide our testimony into four quick parts. I'm going to talk about sort of what is CERTS for those of you who are not familiar with it and give a brief overview of our history. Diana's going to talk briefly about some of our key accomplishments and then what we hope to do moving forward in the next 2 years. CERTS actually stands
Sounds
for...
Sounds good.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. CERTS actually stands for Clean Energy Resource Teams, not the breath mint, although it's always nice to have a breath mint. Makes people think about fresh, clean energy. That was a real creative name that I believe Janet Streff from the Office of Energy Security and Diane Jensen, then of the Minnesota Project, crafted a number of years ago. CERTS as a program actually got launched in 2003 with the mission to connect people with the technical resources they need to both identify and implement clean energy projects in their communities. And that was conservation, energy efficiency, and renewable energy projects. We are actually a public-private partnership, and we have staffing at five different organizations, including the University of Minnesota's Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships, the Minnesota Project, the Green Institute, the Southwest Regional Development Commission, and at the Office of Energy Security at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. We like to say that at our very core, we work collaboratively. This carries into all of our work, both as staff and in our regions. And indeed, it's because of that sense of partnership that in 2006 we were awarded the MEI Partnership of the Year Award. Each of our seven regional teams, we actually have seven regional teams now and span the entire state. We actually have a fact sheet that we'll pass around that you'll see. On the flip side of that, you'll see a map that details our regions. Each of those teams is made up of a diverse mix of people, everything from just interested individuals to small business owners, farmers, members of environmental groups, local utility representatives, local, state, and federal government staff, and elected officials and academics and educators. All of these folks really share a common set of goals and values about strong communities, local jobs, and secure, clean, reliable energy. Each of these teams is actually guided by a local steering committee made up of a diverse set of members from the region. And those steering committees provide direction for the team, craft all of the team's meeting agendas, help direct funding within the region, and serve as community and technical resources.
Thank you.
Our model is based on engaging local communities by organizing at a regional level and empowering regional members to take what they've learned back into their home communities to make local projects happen. We empower our team members with the knowledge about technologies and community energy models that they need, connections to technical resources that they desire to transform their energy ideas into actual projects, and with the funding and funding opportunities and ideas that they need to actually implement those projects as well. Our approach is one of pragmatism and cooperation, and we think it's a model for how tangible economic, social, and environmental benefits can be achieved by reaching across traditional interest groups and taking a true community-based approach. In fact, CERTS is now being looked to by other states and other places around the country as a model for how they might implement community-based clean energy. I mentioned at the beginning that we started in 2003. Our initial funding was provided for by the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources. It was at that point still just the 1C, LCMR. We started by really just convening meetings. The initial purpose of CERTS was to get people together, raise their general level of knowledge about energy efficiency and renewable energy. And in one of our very first meetings that we held, I actually had someone come up to me at the end and said, I think that this is the first time that this group of people has ever sat down in a room together to talk about not what they differ about, but how they might actually be able to work together as they move forward. We worked within each of the teams and with research assistants from local colleges and universities to look at how much energy is currently being used in each of the regions, what are the opportunities for energy efficiency and renewable energy, help them develop a sense of mission and direction amongst the team, and then lay out some strategic energy plans. Starting in 2005, again with funding from LCMR, we started really rolling out those projects and helping people figure out, you had this plan, how are you actually going to get there? What kind of projects could you implement? And to do that, we obviously connected community members with technical resources on a sort of email, phone call, meeting basis, but we also started a program of seed grants. And in that very first year, we had about $25,000 spread across five regions. We estimate on a conservative basis that we leveraged about $110,000 from that initial pot of money. We actually only funded about 15 projects, usually on the order of about $1,000 to $2,000 a piece. And those projects ranged everything from energy efficiency, wind, solar, educational efforts. And they really made an impact. From some of our estimates, we estimate that we saved over 3 million tons of carbon with the projects that we funded that year in a sort of life cycle analysis. Because that went so well, and because we felt the demand for our resources was growing, in 2003, we came back to this body for funding from the Renewable Development Fund. And over the past 2 years, thanks to funding from the Renewable Development Fund, CERTS has really expanded its network and capacity to implement these clean energy, renewable energy projects across the state. And I'll turn it over to Diana to talk about key accomplishments.
Just a correction, that was 2007 that we came back to the Capitol for Renewable Development Fund support. So some of the key accomplishments.
Ms. McGowan, just identify yourself as you start, please.
Diana McEwen, Metro CERTS Green Institute. So we have added, in 2007, we added the metro region of CERTS, which is now up and running and going strong with 19 affiliates across the 11-county metro area. I was hired by the Green Institute to coordinate that the metro area and have been providing on-the-ground support to a variety of projects around the region and working with communities to develop action-oriented forums to get their clean energy ideas up and going. I've been working with community groups in places such as Matamidi, Hastings, Shoreview, and neighborhoods like Como and St. Anthony Park in St. Paul, and the Longfellow and Phillips communities in Minneapolis, in addition to the cities of Edina, White Bear Lake, and Oakdale, among others. We've also recently been working with Rotary groups, including a Rotary group in Lake Elmo. Our Greater Minnesota teams have, based on decision-making by those local steering committees, funded 87 seed grant projects covering only the labor expenditures. This funding has gone to capitalize local energy efficiency and renewable energy projects, fund research and feasibility projects on emerging clean energy technologies, and provided educational assistance to community organizations and learning centers who are ensuring that students of all ages are well-informed about the emerging clean energy opportunities. We have copies of all of the funded projects, but do have some highlighted projects for folks that we can pass out. Our website redesign provides extensive technical resources, sector-specific project planning resources, an informative blog, a clean energy discussion forum, and a daily updated advance calendar. Our listservs reach over 4,000 people across the state, where our monthly highlights, regional, statewide energy activities are helpful with clean energy links and funding resources. We have action alerts and upcoming events. And an independent study or survey of CERTS members in 2007 found that 95% believe the program has been a successful program in Minnesota. Our recent statewide biennial conference served as a wonderful cross-regional networking opportunity and learning forum for over 500 engaged community members. We have rolled out regional level staffing for organizing and communication work in two of the regions, in Northeast and Southeast, and have found this regional specific capacity to be instrumental in catalyzing some clean energy projects in those regions. We've had some awards. You've heard about the MEI Award. In addition, the University of Minnesota Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships were one of the five winners of the Sustainable Endowments Institute 2009 Champions of Sustainable in Communities Awards for helping create CERTs. We also got an award in the Southwest region of CERTs in 2008 for Excellence in Regional Transportation Award from the National Association of Development Organizations, or NADO, for their Wind Development, Roads, Bridges, and Land Use Initiative. We have begun piloting an initiative called the Community Energy Action Fund, where we've provided intensive community support and technical assistance to identify actionable clean energy projects that can motivate the whole community and then limited funding to get these projects moving. We have also been a significant partner in helping launch the Minnesota Schools Cutting Carbon Program, drawing in over 100 schools from across the state, 40% of those from the metro region, and 60% from greater Minnesota, to build student-based teams who connect with teachers and school administrators to help those schools lower their carbon footprints. Some of those schools include the Aiken Public Schools, Itasca Community College, Marshall School District, Two Harbors High School, Vermilion Community College, Irondale High School, Glen Coast Silver Lake Public Schools, Lincoln High School in Senator Kubley's district, Lakeville South, South High School in Minneapolis, and Mountain Lake Public School. And again, there's 103 schools in that project. We've also helped scope out and develop the Minnesota Green Step City Program, and I've got some information and reports. There was a report due to the legislature this year. So looking forward, we are very, very excited to expand the seed grant funding that we've had in the past to include the metro region, which was not included in the past, to add additional organizing capacity in some of our other regions, to expand the Community Energy Action Fund across the state to provide intensive assistance to multiple communities, and opportunities that may arise via the federal funding for clean energy consensus, an appliance harvest, and other ideas that we have to help reduce the state's energy increase the energy efficiency in the state of Minnesota and reduce carbon and increase renewables. In closing, if there were ever a time to keep the CERT statewide clean energy community infrastructure in place, it's certainly now. We're excited about making sure that communities around the state are able to take advantage of the new federal incentives and existing programs, be they state, utility, private, nonprofit, to ensure that we're collectively working to make changes in our energy use and infrastructure and provide a more sustainable energy infrastructure in the process, help strengthen local communities, their people, their economies, and their sense of empowerment. We also have a letter of support from a number of organizations that support the continuation of CERT's funding.
All right. Thank you, Ms. McEwen. Did you go through the numbers yet in any detail? Budget numbers? Why don't you talk about those?
We passed around at the very beginning what was our initial prospectus, and we passed around the initial prospectus and then a little half sheet, which is what we are calling our addendum.
Right.
The reason that we passed around, protocol, Madam Chair, we passed around the original prospectus because we wanted you to have a sense for what we were initially envisioning for CERTs. We feel like over the last 2 years, with the creation of the Metro, expanding our seed grants, we've really started to reach more communities. We feel like the demand for our services has only grown over the last 2 years, and we felt like, before we realized what the budget projections were, that we warranted an expansion. Now, obviously, given budget realities, we tailored that back to 1.25. That's the same level that we had last time around. When we've gone through our calculations, we have about 5 full-time staff at a couple of different organizations. Our core staffing budget, including operations and then what it costs for us to do some travel, actually host these community events, and that sort of thing, is around $850,000. That leaves about $400,000, as we see it, to go directly into communities via either the seed grant funding, this Community Energy Action Fund, or with some organizing assistance. We are hopeful that we might receive some federal funding that could be directed towards some of those seed grant opportunities or that Community Energy Action Fund. We'll have to wait till we know more about that to describe exactly how those dollars will be split, but those resources will be split across the 7 regions so that the Metro will get some funding this next time around for seed grants and for this Community Energy Action Fund. Madam Chair, does that answer the questions that you had about the funding, or would you like more specific details?
No, I think the only question is what we've talked a little bit about putting a proposal in for the federal economic recovery dollars for energy outreach, for outreach to help with the weatherization efforts. Is that incorporated in what you just said, or is that something that's new and different? I wasn't sure if you meant you were talking about that or not. Okay. Do you want to just comment on that?
Would you like me to? Madam Chair, Committee, we put in a proposal briefly about what we've been terming a clean energy census. We envision this not unlike the sort of census that you would do for demographics and population, but it would focus specifically on energy issues. It would involve people going out and canvassing in communities across the state and asking folks door to door, hopefully with a green hat or green T-shirt and a I'm not selling anything sign, about 90 seconds worth of questions. And that might include things like, do you have a programmable thermostat? Do you currently use compact fluorescent light bulbs? Take a look at the pitch of their roof to see if it might be a good site for solar. I mean, there are a number of different things, but what we're hoping to do is reach about 20 to 40,000 people across the state and really find out about getting these folks to say, yes, I would be interested in some follow-up. And that follow-up might be anything from, I'd like to sign up for an energy audit that could be funded through my local utility, or yes, connect me with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to learn more about the new offerings that they have. I want to learn more about incentives from the federal government for appliance trade-ins. I think it could be a variety of different things, but we hope that the Clean Energy Census would be an excellent way to get feedback from folks now and help get them lined up for programs that we're creating moving forward in the coming years.
And so we've had this discussion. We have to put – you don't have details ready to put on paper to give us. I mean, as a how much money, or yet do you?
Yeah.
I don't want to put you on the spot if that's not ready to go public, but if it is, that'd be great.
Madam Chair, we sent some of the, we brought some of that information to the meeting you had last Friday, and we sent some to your committee administrator yesterday, and so we have put some of those numbers briefly to paper. And of course, this is one of those ideas when the committee in the past was asking for ideas about the federal recovery that we put together. So we've, you know, scratched out numbers, and I think that the number that we had on the on that piece full-blown for the whole state was about $1 million, and we talked about creating somewhere in the order of 400 to 500 jobs of people that would be hired from their own community to go and canvass their community and get this kind of assessment of how many people are ready for these energy efficiency upgrades and hopefully identify people in the low-income category that would qualify for the incredible money that we're going to be getting through the weatherization program nationally as well. And that those, hopefully, those folks, once they've done this, and this would be a short-term job, would then be resources in that community because they would be trained to understand a number of things about energy efficiency and renewable energy and what to look for, and hopefully would continue to be a sustainable resource in that community on energy issues.
And I think, members, I've been encouraging them to put this proposal together, and maybe we'll put a bill in to reflect this. But I think it's really important when we're talking about going from weatherizing 4,000 homes a year to 30 or 40,000 homes a year, that it's going to take efforts beyond what we've ever seen before or done before in Minnesota. And so I really like the idea of sending a core of people out across the state to try to help do that outreach, to make sure that those dollars are well spent and that Minnesotans are aware of the opportunities. And it would be a great way to put a lot of people to work for not a lot of money as well. So I think that would really meet the purposes of the federal economic recovery. Anyway, we'll get to that at another day. We can get into those details in a little bit more detail. Are there any other questions, any further discussion on the bill? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for either Ms. McEwen or the other witness, Ms. Polish. Could you describe to me, when you talk about the successes that you've been able to accomplish with little money in terms of planting the seed, could you describe to me kind of a simple term for somebody who is not very knowledgeable of this area, of the accomplishments that, you know, what is something that a family could do, a homeowner, or something that is accomplished through this effort of outreach and kind of touching people's lives. Could you describe some examples for me?
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, let me give you two examples. And the first one is actually going to be based on a school model. In our very first year of seed grant funding, we gave a couple of $1,000s to the Park Rapids School District up in central Minnesota. They wanted to do a small wind system. They had a local champion, someone who'd been really interested in renewable energy technologies, and he was really trying to get a team of people together to work on this. And he felt like if he could get one bit of seed money, he could use that to then go around to the rest of the community and leverage some funding. He raised over $20,000 from other folks in the community. This was enough money to actually have people in the community believe that this project was real. It was actually going to move forward. They've now actually done live online web tracking of the turbine so that they can use that turbine in science classes. And so that's one small example. He got the idea of a small wind system actually just by participating in CERTS, being part of our meetings where we've talked about small wind, the opportunities that are there. And I think that that is emblematic of our overall process. You know, you come to a meeting. You might say, hey, I didn't really know anything about solar thermal before I got here. I'd like to try to figure out how I could do that, and then they take it back. We have other team members who might have been to a meeting. They met an installer at that meeting. They also met their local utility representative, whom they might not otherwise have known. We've walked through the process. So if you're thinking about, say, a solar PV system, here are a number of the things that you have to think about. You have to do your interconnection. It's always good to talk with your utility up front. You're going to want to find out about dealers. You're going to want to think about how much it costs. We give them those sorts of introductory tools. They can follow up with us over a phone call and say, well, give me some more information. Give me some more details. We'll do that. And then because they've been at meetings with these folks and participated with them, you know, typically over a couple of years, they then pick up the phone and say, hey, my local utility friend, can you help me actually walk through this process? And have gone through as a homeowner a whole process of installing a solar system based on knowing a utility person, knowing local contractors, knowing local dealers, knowing what the whole process was, and then having a community of people that they could go back to when they said, this is so frustrating. I can't make it work. Help me work through this next one. They have a community of support around them to say, no, you're going to make this project happen, and we'll help you move it forward. I mean, I think that that's... I think it's both building that technical knowledge and those relationships, but also that network of support around people to make them realize that there are other people supporting their efforts.
And I guess if I could add, Chair, in the metro, it's been a little bit different because we have nearly half the state's population in my region, and I'm one of seven regions. And I live in this region, unlike my colleagues who travel to the regions that they coordinate. I live in this region, and so it's been a little easier to take a different tact here. I work really directly with local community groups that I named a number of them. And we did some projects this year, including one in the Longfellow neighborhood of Minneapolis, where we recruited block leaders. And this was a project that was led by the Center for Energy and Environment and that we were a partner with on the ground in that community along with the Longfellow Community Council. We trained block leaders to recruit their neighbors to be part of a residential energy program where they got a free workshop, free materials, and then they got a home visit to analyze their energy use and get real details about how to do these energy efficiency pieces in their own home. So they were taught, and it was taught in a way that was bringing their community and their block together. They were doing it along with their peers so that if they had challenges, they knew other people on the block that were doing the same thing, and they could call them and say, how did you put this Piper app on? I'm not sure how to do this, or whatever the case may be, and really trying to take that communitarian approach where we know that people are going to be more willing and more likely to take these pieces on because they know that their neighbors are doing it as well. And we found some real successes, and we've learned some things, and we're looking forward to continuing that work through a project that hopefully will be funded by the LCCMR.
Madam Chair, I just have a follow-up.
Senator Torres Wright.
Madam Chair and members, what I hope that we do as we continue, Senator Kubley, these conversations is that we learn from these experiences and really provide the funding so that you can do full circle intervention. Because if we go to the families, we go to the communities and say, you know, these are great things that you really could do, but then the communities are not able to really see, well, it did happen, and now I can do it myself because it actually works, then we are just half done. And I think that is, I think, you know, the project that you describe in the Longfellow in our neighborhood was very successful because you had a lot of people who were really ready to do it. But many times you find areas where people are not ready and they want to see the proof. Does this actually work? And so you're going to have to do a little bit more work, and we have to provide the resources so that you can complete and actually show the community that these projects actually work.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Over the past 6 years, as this project has been going on and we're proposing to continue it, how much new energy has been brought on stream as a result of the activity of this program? What's the new energy amount that has come into being as a result of the program?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Polish.
Senator Hahn. We're actually in the process of doing a lot of that calculation right now. Let me start by saying the projects that we funded in 2007 and 2008, the reports have just started. We just started getting reports at the very end of December for the projects that we funded in 2007 and the projects that we funded in 2008. Those reports actually won't be delivered until June. So from the direct funding piece, we're in the process of calculating that. I'd be happy to follow up with you. We've done some of those calculations already, and I could give you the numbers that we have so far. I think that beyond that, though, a lot of what CERTS does is far more than seed grant funding, and I think that we've struggled with the idea of how do you quantify the fact that a local banker came to a meeting, learned about small wind, said, you know what I'd really like to do is do a small wind project, went back, invested in a small wind project, helped his county develop a small wind development guide for the entire county, which then led to other small wind projects in the county, and then became a member of a board of a large wind development project that led to a large wind project that's now being developed in Candiohi County. It is hard for me. I work on the spirit of collaboration. I would never say that's all because of CERTS. It would be inappropriate, not fair. I mean, that would be overselling it. But at the same time, I think that we have been a catalyst for a number of different projects like that all over the state. And that's a wishy-washy answer, I realize. I think that our impact has been great. I don't have a specific number for you. I can give you some more specific numbers based specifically on the things that we funded. But more than that, I think it's a lot of testimonial, anecdotal kinds of things.
And Madam Chair, and thank you for that. I guess I'm just trying to, you know, we've got tough times in the budget, and I understand the idea here is to use some state taxpayer money to fund things that would result in increasing our energy resources. And so how do we evaluate this program in that context? We're spending money. We're supposed to be encouraging the development of new forms of energy. Okay. What have we gotten for the expense that we've made? What does that translate into, you know, investment per kilowatt hours produced? Or I don't know what the metric is, but if we don't have something like that, how do we evaluate this versus other things that we are being asked to presumably, we're not asking to spend a lot more money in most areas. We're being asked to spend money here. We're being asked mostly to cut. But I'm just kind of struggling with how do you evaluate that and justify an additional expense when we've got a $6 billion shortfall. So yeah, I don't know if you can help us on that, but that's a concern I have.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Polish.
Senator Hahn. I think that's part of why we're actually creating some additional metrics right now to really measure, you know, what is the bang for the buck that you're getting out of even a feasibility study, and how do you best go about quantifying that so that we have measurable numbers, and it may be a feasibility study for perennial biomass, converting a farm, you know, toward that and using that into a pellet stove. And power. I mean, how do you quantify the feasibility study aspect of that? We are exceedingly aware that there are limited resources There are a number of projects looking for assistance. How do we justify ourselves? We are statewide, which I think makes us very different. We can mobilize people with a regional focus, but also help them learn from each other so that you can host, say, a college forum where two different universities, Crookston and Bemidji State, get together and say, okay, how are you making it work? Why can't we make it work in the same way? Here's what we have happening. Could you do some of that? I think that we can articulate a number of impacts beyond kilowatt hours saved and clean kilowatt hours generated. But obviously that's critical. We are moving. We just recently received some funding from the Bush Foundation to roll out a 9 million kilowatt hour savings program. That's 9 million kilowatt hour savings per year over the next 2 years, which I think will absolutely bring demonstrable savings that we can account for. That said, if we don't have core staff to do that project, we're going to have to give that money back to them. I think that we're moving into that. I think that CERTS has been largely about developing that capacity. We're there. We need to start documenting it better. I absolutely respect that. And we can give you the numbers that we have so far.
All right. Thank you. Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, and I just would like to, you know, I appreciate Senator Tahan's question. So often in evaluating, there are certain things that are real easy to count. You can pick them up and you can count them. But not everything we can count is worth counting. And yet there are other things that you cannot really count but are very important. And so I think the explanation that you gave us addresses that. There are some things that you will be able to measure and measure accurately, but there are other things such as, and as I'm hearing you from the beginning of your testimony talk about the increased demand for what you do, that indicate a change in attitude and behavior that would be very difficult to measure its impact, at least for a long period of time. So it's hard to put a quantitative value on that. I think over time we are going to see a different way of dealing with energy and conservation and the way we are using all our resources, not just energy, that are going to be direct outcome of the work you're doing. And you're right, we will not necessarily be able to trace that right back to you or you or you, but the collective movement from the various agencies and groups that are working on this will make a big difference in the way Minnesota survives into the next, well, the rest of this century and the century beyond. I think we have to keep that long-term view in place. And so while I appreciate Senator Hand's comments, I do think that we ought to acknowledge that there are some things that are really hard to measure.
All right. Good conversation. Thank you all for your comments and questions. Senator Kubley, I think you need to, on line 14, define which metropolitan area. Is that the Twin Cities? Should we say Twin Cities metropolitan area? Or are we talking about the Granite Falls metropolitan area?
Madam Chair, Granite Falls doesn't qualify under federal definition. Okay. But, you know, my assumption is that it's the 7-county metro area.
11.
Oh, they're saying 11 counties.
Okay. Should we say that?
Different people count it different ways.
Yes, indeed.
They've got 11 counties in this metro.
Okay. And then because the other technical assistance is already included for the rest of the state in that other number. So do you want to just move that amendment, Senator Kubley, if you would?
That puts the word 11 county in front of metropolitan? All right.
I think that'll do it.
Madam Chair, on line 114, then to Senate File 1215, I would add the words 11 county between the word the and metropolitan on that line.
Thank you. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. This morning, I started out, you know, it was a late night here for some of us last night, for many of us in different committees, and I was at a breakfast meeting this morning with some of you and couldn't remember where anybody lived. And I was so I'm proud of myself for remembering that you live in Granite Falls, Senator.
Well, Madam Chair, I've never forgotten that you lived in St. Paul.
Well,
oh, sure. Let us forget.
And I'm embarrassed.
best.
So, yeah, my standard for myself is not very high. So I'm embarrassed to admit that. And thank you for keeping my hometown in mind as well. Is there any further discussion on Senator Kubley's bill? Senator Kubley, would you like to make a motion on it?
I would, Madam Chair. I would move that Senate File 1215 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill for this committee.
As amended.
As amended, that's correct.
On that motion, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. We've got one more bill up, and Senator Metzen, I think, is having lunch with Vice President Biden, we hear. So Senator Frederickson is going to pinch hit for him today as a co-author of Senate File 919.
Oh, no, Dallas.
And I think, go ahead, Senator Frederickson.
Chair, I'm a stand-in for Senator Metzen. And Kath also is a stand-in for Mr. Meyer, so you sort of have the second team here. But since they didn't give us any particular instructions, I have the A1 amendment.
All right.
And I'm going to make some changes to the amendment. We'll see if Senator Metzen leaves us again.
That's the prerogative when they leave you in charge. You can do what you like.
Madam Chair.
Senator Frederickson.
On my A1 amendment, delete subdivision 1 on line 1, page 1, line 12, delete previously.
Is this the amendment?
And on line 13, page 1, delete as applied to and insert the word for. Then on line 14, delete the Commissioner of Natural Resources will consult with the and insert in consultation with the, and on line 15, and delete 2 at the end of line 14. Line 15, delete the extent necessary to ensure this and will furnish. And at the end of that same line, delete of finance and insert will develop. And on line 16, after in, insert priority and delete everything after order to the period. On line 16, delete everything after the period. And on line 17, delete assumes the many. And then on line 20, delete all of line 20 and delete all of line 21 up to the period. On line 29, delete interior and exterior of existing. And on page 2,
just because our initials are on it.
Line 4, delete paid for and insert financed.
Sorry, I'm distracted.
And on page 2, line 5, insert request appropriations for. And on line 6, delete for which.
Wait, Senator Frederickson.
But where page do you two, do it on page 5?
5?
Where do you do it?
On page 2, line 5. After of, insert request for appropriations.
Okay, insert.
4, delete priority projects. Line 6, delete for which. And line 6, delete appropriations will be. Delete all of line 7 to the period and insert in the next funding cycle.
All right. I think that's a lot, Senator Frederickson. I wonder if you could maybe just in a few of these changes, would you mind just reading the sentences that you've changed to make sure we understand them?
On page 1, line 14, it'll read, in consultation with the Commissioner of Finance, the Commissioner will develop a list of projects to be financed from the account in priority order. In the next sentence, I'm just deleting the legislature assumes that many, just starting with projects, and deleting lines 20 and 21.
So it starts with projects, did you say?
Yes.
On line 17?
Projects for preservation and replacement of portions of existing capital assets will constitute betterments and capital improvements within the meaning of the Constitution and capital expenditures under generally accepted accounting principles.
It's already long, even though you...
Does that need a comma in it, or am I... I'm not quite sure I understand it.
Period.
Oh, we'll constitute... Okay, well, we can get to that. All right, and then...
On line 29, we're deleting interior and exterior of existing. I'm not sure what other sides of a building there are besides interior and exterior.
The insulation.
Okay.
And, Madam Chair, on page 2, line 4, I'm deleting paid for and inserting financed. And in the last part of that sentence, starting at line 5, appropriations during the preceding calendar year, as well as a list of requests for appropriations for natural resource asset preservation and replacement projects in the next funding cycle. I don't believe there's a substantive change there. It's just phrasing and use.
Okay. Is everybody fairly clear on the... I think because there's a lot there, perhaps we should vote on your amendments.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to incorporate
them. You just want to incorporate them? Okay. Does staff have these very clearly? You haven't? Okay. All right. We'll incorporate that into the A1 amendment as an author's amendment, and it is an author's amendment, correct? This is the first hearing for the bill? All right. On the motion, our Senator Frederickson moves the A1 amendment as... adjusted. on that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Well, Madam Chair, is there an opening in the revisor's office we hadn't heard about?
Well, we probably use the pay increase, right?
And, Madam Chair, members, this is an initiative to try and establish within the Department of Natural Resources something similar to the HEPRA in the MNSCU system. That's the whole idea of this. Yeah. And I'd like to have Kath also explain further what the bill does or what they envision it would happen. As I understand it, this is not a department bill, but they work closely with some of the authors in developing it.
Okay. Senator Frederickson, not to be too flippant here, but HEPRA has been really successful in part because it has a pronounceable acronym. And if you want to have an established presence in the bonding bill, you might want to come up with a better acronym than NEPR.
We'll work on that. Do you
Thank
have
you.
Suggestions?
Just a suggestion. Ms. Auska.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kath Auska. I'm the facility manager for the Department of Natural Resources. And as Senator Frederickson said, we were not the initiator of this bill, but what it does do for us, currently DNR does its asset preservation under 16B.307. And a limitation of that statute for us is the line that says major projects to replace or repair roofs, windows, tuck pointing, all of which is fine. But then it says site renovations necessary to support buildings.
Can you point to where you're looking at?
This is in 16B.307.
Oh, okay.
And by pointing out the site renovations necessary to support buildings, it limits us in our use of asset preservation fundings just to sidewalks and parkings, septic systems in support of buildings. It doesn't allow us then to use asset preservation funding on any of the miles and miles of trails, water access sites, water control structures, state park roads, septic systems that support campgrounds. And so we believe that the language of whatever acronym we give this bill does give us the freedom to use asset preservation money for all of those other things which are certainly heavily used by people within or visiting the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you. Are there questions? Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, it certainly makes a lot of sense to me. Do we have... the asset preservation funds to add on all those other things, or will we have to increase asset preservation funds?
I think that's a good question for Senator Frederickson. Or Ms. Auska to respond to.
Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, certainly we could always use as much asset preservation money as we can get, and certainly this would increase what we would be listing under our asset preservation needs.
So, it, I mean, some of this may be funded through other means, but it is, I guess it's just being put into a different category. Senator Frederickson?
Madam Chair, I think an important part of this also is the last part of this bill where they're to make requests for the next funding cycle, which would also give the Capital Improvement Committee, Bonding Committee, some guidance as to what we need in the park system, natural resources.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
All right. Okay, well, I think this is a good approach to trying to preserve those assets and protect those assets in a more systematic way.
Madam Chair, I don't know where this bill is supposed to go from here. Is it supposed to make its way to capital investment? Or?
We're thinking to the finance, just to full finance committee. Well, it has to go there next anyway. So that's where we'll send it, and then I don't know if any other committees need to see it or if that's what – I guess that would be up to Senator Cohen and you to discuss, or to Senator Metzen.
Madam Chair, and you'd like this bill to – I assume Senator Metzen would like this bill to proceed on its own, not be part of the budget bill.
I'm assuming so.
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 919 as amended the recommended to pass and refer to the full committee.
All right. On that motion, would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 919?
Could I just,
Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, just a question. If this is going to be in lieu of an existing statute that governs this area, I was wondering if we shouldn't have something that basically is notwithstanding that section, that this money can be used for all these purposes. So it does. Just to be clear.
Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Knopf, do you have a suggestion how we would do that?
I was trying to look it up quickly here, but I didn't get to it yet. But the witness named a statutory reference 16. Earlier. What was there?
Madam Chair, that's Representatives, or Senators, it is 16B.307, which is actually the Department of Administration statute.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson, I was thinking that it might be a good idea to include that reference. I think it would be good to say Madam Chair, on line 1.24 before capital, insert notwithstanding section 16B.307 subdivision 1.
Madam Chair, I would make that as a motion.
All right. Senator Frederickson's motion. Does everyone understand the motion? I think you better withdraw your other motion.
And Chair, I'll withdraw my motion to refer.
And to pass.
Then move on page 1, line 24, notwithstanding 16B307. And Mr. Knopf, what was the subdivision?
Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson, subdivision 1.
Subdivision 1.
Right.
Okay. On that motion, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Madam
All right.
Chair, I move that Senate File 919 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the full committee.
Should I give a suggestion?
No.
Green Resources and Environmental Asset Preservation and Replacement, GREAPRA. Yeah, well, we can, you can take a little more time on that. On Senator Frederickson's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. And the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, Senator Frederickson.
Good job. I didn't miss the time.